This episode of the UAV Digest is sponsored by Go Engineer, provider of design, engineering, and 3D printing solutions for the aerospace and unmanned vehicles industries. To learn more, visit theuavdigest.com/goengineer. And by UAV Propulsion Tech, a provider of propulsion, servo, autopilots, and rescue and recovery parachute solutions for the unmanned aerial vehicle market. For more information, check out www.uavpropulsiontech.com. This is episode 152 of the UAV Digest. I'm Max Flight in Hartford, Connecticut.
And I'm David Vanderhoof in Philadelphia, Pennsylvania. And I guess we owe everyone an apology, don't we, Max?
Yeah, we kind of messed up a little bit on the last episode talking about the new part 107.
And if we picked something to screw up, I have to admit this was one of the ones that we probably shouldn't have. I misspoke and said that you do not need an ATC approval to fly in Class B, C, D, E airspace. Okay, let's get this straight, since I've gotten lots and lots and lots of emails telling me I was completely off my rocker. That's dead wrong. We reversed it in our show notes. You are required to have ATC permission to fly in Class B, C, D airspace. So thanks to everybody who wrote in to David at theuavdigest.com and flooded that inbox. I get it. We make mistakes, and occasionally Max and I screw up, and we did. And we apologize, and we won't make that mistake ever again.
No, we might make another one. It'll be different, and thank goodness, David, we have such great listeners that are right there to catch us when we stumble.
We were in a bit of a panic and a franticness to get information out to you guys, and we should have taken a couple more minutes. So, but we've got a great show ahead of us. We've got our friend, Princess Alea Pandolfi of the Kashmir World Foundation, who we interviewed again at Innovations of Flight Day a couple weeks ago. Flirty, our favorite delivery system, was down in my favorite town, Cape May, New Jersey. Max actually attended the Hogan Lovells webinar on Monday, and he's going to give us that. So with that, I think we've got a full show, so let's kick it off. And Max, you want to give a little bit of an introduction about what we're about to hear?
We spoke with Princess Alea Pandolfi from the Kashmir World Foundation at the Smithsonian, and she's going to tell us about, well, the Da Vinci Build-A-Drone Workshop. That's something we talked about previously in episode 124. Also, the first Teachers Take Flight Workshop coming up. And mostly she tells us about a new program monitoring sea turtle activity with Michelle drones. This is a fascinating story. So why don't we listen to Alea? Joining us now is Princess Alea Pandolfi, who longtime listeners will remember from last year from the Kashmir Foundation. Great to see you again.
Good to see you too. Thanks for having me again.
And like last time, you have a display here?
Yes, I do.
And why don't you tell our listeners a little bit about the foundation, some of the activities that you're involved in?
Sure. So the Kashmir World Foundation is our umbrella organization, and we have three main divisions of Kashmir World Foundation: Kashmir Academy, Kashmir Robotics, and then Kashmir Rose, which is the art division. But we're here today representing Kashmir Robotics, and we are actually talking about our Da Vinci Challenge Build-A-Drone Workshop, which has been 2 years. In July, it's our two-year anniversary. We've done 14 workshops, graduated over 200 students as young as 8 and as mature as 80. And it's been pretty awesome. And we're doing our very, very first Teachers Take Flight workshop this summer, which we talked about.
Yes,
that is new. Yes. So it's our first one that we're doing. We actually have some teachers signed up from outside of our area coming down for the workshop. It's a 5-day workshop. similar to the Da Vinci Challenge Build a Drone workshop that we've done, except it's more focused on educating educators to go back to their schools and find a way to either integrate the Da Vinci Challenge curriculum or use some bits and pieces of what we do and integrate that into their current programs that they have at their schools as well.
So how are you approaching educators? How are you finding participants, volunteers to engage in this?
So it's interesting. I mean, we've had a lot of inquiries, and I believe actually the last show we did in November, we had mentioned the educators workshop, and I had a teacher from Smith College contact me after that.
Oh, excellent.
And I had another teacher from California contact me after that, and both of them signed up the day we launched the program. So they were really eagerly waiting to have something like this because there's no program out there that's actually focused on educating teachers on how to build drones. And then those teachers can go back to their schools and teach their students. And the other reason I really wanted to start a program for educators is because I think, you know, to make this project more sustainable and allow students to have a much longer exposure to what we do, it would be great if we see it happen at their schools as a year-long project. But what's the other thing that's really exciting is Thomas Jefferson High School. We've been participating in their TJ Star event, which is the end of the year, where students present their research projects. And we're one of the invited guests that come out. And I usually do a talk about one of my projects, which I'll be talking about today here as well, and the Da Vinci Challenge Build a Drone Workshop. And we have interest from their aerospace engineering club as well as their UAV club to take our new project, Michal Drones, which is using drones to locate sea turtle nests, as a year-long project they want to do with their club. So it's not just the teachers that are getting excited. The students are really excited, and then they want to take this on as something they want to continue with as a year-long project.
And Thomas Jefferson High School is located near where?
Thomas Jefferson High School is in Alexandria. It was number one in Newsweek for the best educational institute anywhere in the U.S. So it's really an honor to be working with the teachers at TJ, but also the students at TJ who will be making innovative differences in the world as they approach universities and careers in the future.
So why is the sea turtle research so important?
So if you recall, the first show that I did with you guys was on the Wildlife Conservation UAV Challenge, which was focused on identifying and locating poachers in the African bush. So we started with that project as our first project because that is something we felt we could actually solve, that type of terrain. The aircraft was capable of flying in and detecting poachers in that environment. And the focus of that was not just the aircraft itself, but really getting students and academics and hobbyists involved in the embedded systems process, being able to process information on board the aircraft. So that's what we really started with protecting endangered species. So my second project, which is with sea turtles, our drone is called Michelle. It's kind of a fun name.
I'm kind of fond of that name.
Yeah, it's M-I-S-H-E-L-L. So it's kind of like a fun name for a drone.
Right.
And the reason I chose this as our second project is because now we're looking at coastal drones. What can coastal drones do for conservation purposes? And the best first endangered species we wanted to work with are sea turtles. There are seven species of sea turtles. All seven are endangered, and they can almost be found anywhere in the world along the coast, except for places now that are overpopulated and have lots of buildings. And it's difficult to monitor all the beaches in the world looking for sea turtle nests, let alone just some of the beaches that are in areas that we live in are still very difficult to reach, and or you don't have the manpower to do so. So we figured, well, you know, why don't we look into being able to identify sea turtle tracks, because we understand that you're capable of doing image processing and identifying based on particular pattern recognitions. So that's what we would be looking for. We would first be flying up and down the coast of a beach and looking for sea turtle tracks. And once we locate the sea turtle tracks, then we would actually be able to find the nest.
And what kind of drones are you using to do this, and what kind of flight time do you have to be able to track these beautiful creatures?
So that's a great question. We recently just partnered with Georgia Southern University and their Sea Turtle program on St. Catherine's Island. It is a private island, beautiful island off the coast of Georgia, the only privately owned island that focuses on education, research, and conservation. So it fits exactly into Cashmere World Foundation's mission, and we fit into their mission as well. So we were invited by David Smith, who is the chairman of the board for the St. Catherine's Foundation, and we were his guest over Memorial Day weekend, and I got to celebrate my birthday in an amazing way. Thanks to David. So we were out there, and we had a chance to go out with his biologists, Janie and Gail. Gail's been on the island for about 30 years with his sea turtle program, and he's educated thousands of students and teachers on being able to help with creating the awareness and the education of sea turtle and importance of them as well. So we had this wonderful opportunity. Myself, my husband, and our little 4.5-year-old Cashmere Rose went with us on this trip, and Janie picked us up at 5:30 in the morning on Sunday morning, May 29th. We went on her ATV. It took us about maybe 10 minutes to get to the beach. Perfect. There's not a human footstep on this beach, but there were lots of feral pig footprints and stuff on the beach. Lots of crab burrows and horseshoe crabs were eaten by a lot of these pigs and everything. So it was really interesting to wake up so early in the morning and go to a beach that would look deserted, but yet it's beautiful. And we went looking for tracks in the ATV. So we found our first track probably around, I would say, 7 o'clock. And it was so exciting. I was like, oh my gosh, wow, look at the tracks. Let's follow these tracks. So we followed the tracks, and we were very, very lucky to actually find a sea turtle nest, because sometimes the turtles will come on shore and they won't lay a nest, and it's called a false crawl. So it was a great opportunity for us to first get there and see a sea turtle nest. And the second thing was, it was located in an area where it would get washed away, which meant we had to relocate it. So that's where the challenge began. So now let's say, you know, for the Sea Turtle Project, our first mission is to find those tracks and then the nest, but also to determine, is it an actual nest, or did the turtles actually just do a false crawl and decide for whatever reason that this is not a good spot for me to lay those eggs? So we began the next step, which is to dig. And it took us about 15 minutes to dig and find the first egg. Cashmere got to pull it out, and it was her first little sea turtle egg, soft, gushy, and kind of leathery. So the next thing we had to do was get a mitochondrial DNA analysis from the shell. So we had to actually crack open the shell and cover the yolk with the sand so predators wouldn't know where it was, and take the shell and put it in a alcohol solution, and then they have to send it out to their DNA analysis at Georgia Southern. So that's kind of like the second step they have to do. And then Janie had to document everything by hand. So my brain is like overload of all these ideas I have of how I can make their job more efficient and effective as well. And then the third thing we had to do was we had to go and dig a new nest and relocate the 90 eggs that we found in this nest to a different location, which was about maybe 20 feet away or something like that. So you have to find the best high location to relocate these nests. So Cashmere got her name on this first nest. It was such a remarkable and beautiful experience. And I think for me, anytime I start any new projects, they are technology projects, and they are focused on using unmanned aerial systems to actually help do science in a better, more efficient manner. And it's just such a privilege to actually be in the field working with these people, understanding what it is that they go through on a day-to-day basis. 3 months of nesting season, and then it's 3 months of hatching season. They get up every morning, and they're dedicated to go on the beach and find these nests, either to relocate them, mark them, and then send that information over to the right authorities.
So you want to be able to use drones to, as you say, make this a more efficient process so that the tracks can be identified more easily than just driving the ATV up and down the beach. Do you envision using fixed wing or multi-rotors to do this?
And that's the reason we had to go out there to really figure out, well, you know, what are the best types of unmanned systems that would be useful in this environment? Now, St. Catharines is a unique location because it is private. It is a 30-mile kind of diameter area of island and radius, I'm sorry. And they have three different beaches, North Beach, Middle Beach, and then South Beach. Middle Beach is not at all accessible by the ATV, so they actually have to take a boat across. And then North Beach was not as big as we thought it was, maybe about 4 miles long. But South Beach was relatively really long. We were only able to cover half the area, and Gail had to cover the other half the next day when we went out to South Beach. And it takes about, 20 to 30 minutes on an ATV to even go out there. So this is what I'm thinking. If you have, let's say, even multi-copters in this situation would work, because we can fly over 4 mile beach easily up and down the coast. And then also Middle Beach, because it's not accessible, and it's probably another four miles or so as well. South Beach is probably, I think, about 11 miles or more. I could be completely off on how long they are. But that's kind of a rough idea of what we're looking at. So let's say we sent out a drone and you realize North Beach doesn't have any nests, then the biologists can actually take their efforts and put it towards the beach that does. So we know that South Beach is a much bigger beach, which means more than likely they're going to have more nests. And that was true, because the next day when we went out again, we actually found three nests on South Beach. And they were about maybe 20 to 30 feet away from each other. Luckily, we only had to relocate one, but that one that we had to relocate took us about, I think almost an hour to dig and find. So once again, I'm like, okay, it seems like when I was in Peru in February for the Sea Turtle, International Sea Turtle Conference, I gave a talk there, and a lot of the biologists were kind of intimidated by the idea of using an unmanned system, because from their perspective, it's like, oh, you're going to take our jobs away. And I'm like, no, not really. I'm going to help make your job easier. And after going through this process, it is true. I realized, like, you know, it takes so long to go up and down these beaches, just find those tracks. And once you've actually find the nest, then the amount of time it takes to dig, and then you have, you know, in certain states, they lose the egg, for example, here, and then you have to relocate it. So if I can help you find these faster, wouldn't that actually make more sense?
Yeah, yeah. So what's the next step? What happens next?
So the next step is we've actually expanded the program to include not just the drone, but we are also working on a sensor or radar that can give us the exact location of the nest. So we're putting together our sea turtle advisory panel, experts from around the world that are experts on sea turtles, but more importantly, experts that are experts on technology and that can help us take their knowledge and integrate it into this program. So the first step is look for the nest. Once you found the nest, then make it easier by having some kind of tool that you can just scan over, like a metal detector kind of thing, right? Where you know exactly where these eggs are. Save that time. The next thing we want to do is for the DNA analysis, because they're losing an egg from every nest. Last year they had 209 nests, and that meant they lost 209 eggs. And one of the statistics of sea turtles is one out of every 1,000 survives to adulthood. And because of that, that's a pretty high ratio of what we're losing. So the third thing that we're working on is a new way of doing DNA analysis, where we could use some type of swab, which is non-intrusive to the eggs, and send that out and get the same mitochondrial DNA for the mom turtle, so we can track to see where she's going. And the fourth thing, which is kind of simple, but I'm surprised that there's nothing that exists right now for this, is an app. Instead of handwriting everything, why can't we just develop an app where they enter the information, take a photo of that nest, the eggs, and everything else. That gets attached to the file. When they get back, internet, boom, it gets sent off to all the different locations that it needs to. Because right now, they write it down in the field. Then they have to go and write it in the master book. Then they have to transfer it to their Excel. And through that, they have to email it out to these different organizations. Then they actually have to enter the data into seaturtle.org. So that's like four-step process. I'm thinking the amount of time it takes. And then the second part of it is the rate of error can increase with that many transfers of data. So our little Michelle drone project has expanded to many other ways that we're going to be working with these biologists to help them make their job easier, more efficient, so we could do and have better science.
This is great. This is another example of using unmanned systems, not just for their own sake, but to further some larger objective. And where can we go to find out more about what you're doing here?
So you can go to our website, which is KashmirWorldFoundation.org, and that's KashmirWorldFoundation.org. And I'll just tell you quickly about our exciting workshops this summer. We're doing a private workshop for girls in technology. Yay! I was so excited. This company out in Chantilly, Eagle Ray, has sponsored 6 girls who were participating in the Girls in Technology program this year to do our workshop as an experience scholarship for them. So we're really, really thrilled to be working with these girls. That will be the last week of June. And then next month, we have our open workshop at the Microsoft store, which will be our 2-year anniversary for. Exciting. And our first Teachers Take Flight workshop is on July 11th through the 15th. And then we have another super exciting workshop we're doing in Florida.
Oh.
Right on the beach.
On the beach.
which beach?
So Melbourne. We're going to be in Melbourne. And we've partnered with the Sea Turtle Conservancy and the Brevard County Endangered Lands Program and the Barrier Island Sanctuary Education Center to teach this workshop at their facility in Florida, August 11th through the 13th. So if you guys are down there, come join us.
Just amazing, amazing. So, Aaliyah, you're always involved in such great projects that really have a lot of meaning and importance. And so we appreciate the work that you're doing, but also for taking the time to come and speak to us and in our audience. So have a great day today. Good luck at your table. And we'll talk to you soon, I'm sure.
Yes, thank you so much again for having me on the show.
Can I say thank you for having her name her new program after my wife?
Michelle, yeah, huh? That's right. Yes, Michelle.
Well, thanks. And we look forward to working with you again throughout the year and getting out your message and the friendship that we've developed with you.
Yes, and thank you guys once again for doing what you do, because I think it's so important to help educate a broader audience of the positive aspects of using unmanned systems for many different things. And we're excited because you guys give us the opportunity to share our programs and, more importantly, the education of making this a safe and new venture.
Thanks again.
All right. Thank you.
Thank you.
Well, David, it was really exciting to see her and speak with her again. I just love the way that she's taking a good cause, sea turtles, for example, and looking at how using unmanned aircraft can really assist that operation, make it more efficient and help out the researchers.
I just wish I could bottle some of her energy into my life. Aaliyah is nonstop, perpetual motion, and we value her friendship, and we value sort of the common themes that we sort of come together. And it's really good to see positive things. And I jokingly said it was nice that she named her new drone program after my wife, Michelle. But it was a really good interview. We look forward to working with her going forward. And turtles are cool. So definitely go to uavdigest.com and you can see the tiny little motor next to my giant body, which is kind of funny because basically I'm standing next to her and I'm still about 3 feet taller than her. So it's very, very funny. So for a little humor, you can go see that. So with that, Max, I think we need to get along to some news. Huh? What do you think?
Flirty was in the news again. They conducted their first U.S. ship-to-shore drone delivery.
I like it. You know why? Because it took place in Cape May. For those who don't know, Cape May was where I was married to my wife. But if you don't know Cape May is the very tip of New Jersey. It's where the Delaware River meets the Atlantic Ocean. We know that after listening to my Langley interviews and talking to Flirty themselves, they did a medical delivery of drugs to Western Virginia. Langley flew their SR-22 as the initial place, and then a quadcopter or a hexacopter took and flew it from the airport to the remote site delivering meds. This was a ship-to-shore test, and what they did was park a barge in the middle of the Delaware River. And Cape May Airport is one of the test sites for the Mid-Atlantic region based in Virginia. They fly UAVs now out of that airport. So what they did was to simulate a ship-to-shore delivery of medications due to a crisis. They flew from the barge into Cape May Airport delivering medication.
And this was done in conjunction with the Johns Hopkins University School of Medicine. It was at the invitation of something called the Field Innovation Team, or FIT, which is an interesting organization. They're a disaster preparedness nonprofit organization. They also had guests there from the United Nations Office for the Coordination of Humanitarian Assistance. And that was as part of the Drones in Disasters Do Tank. Now, I hadn't heard anything about do tanks before, but do tanks are apparently groups where multidisciplinary experts come together and they collaborate on solutions to humanitarian disaster scenarios. So,
well, you've heard of a think tank.
Well, I know what a think tank is, but not...
Well, think tanks are...
Now
wow,
I get
did
it.
You see that light
now
bulb go off there, folks?
A do tank. Okay.
You're not thinking about the project. You're actually doing the project.
Perfect. I think that's really fascinating, David, because you know, it's not just Flirty doing this and not just them doing it in conjunction with the university, but I mean they're looking at it from this broader perspective of providing services during humanitarian disasters and things like that. So hats off to Flirty again.
And we learned an important word, kids. We've learned do tanks.
Do tanks.
And that's spelled D-O, not D-E-W.
Right.
Now, I felt really kind of guilty, but I sort of dumped this on you. But I've done a Hogan Lovells thing, so it was time for you to do it. And I was sitting in a seminar in an office on how to pay bills while you got to talk UAVs simultaneously. So I'm going to spare everybody about my online program, but let's talk about what you did on Monday.
Yes, Hogan Lovells had a webinar titled, "The FAA and DOT Just Released the Small UAS Rule. Will Your Company Be Ready?" And this was a webinar that ran for quite a while, over an hour, maybe close to 90 minutes. And what they did is go through the document, the Part 107 information. Now, much of it lined up really well with what you and I did last week, David, giving a summary, a briefer summary.
But I'm sure they got the ATC part right.
Yeah, they did. but a couple of things that they mentioned that we didn't that I thought were kind of interesting concerning visual line of sight, the remote pilot in command, the PIC, the visual observer, if you have one, and the person manipulating the controls must all be able to see the unmanned aircraft throughout the entire flight, although Part 107 does allow for brief loss of sight. Another thing we picked up in the webinar is that daisy chaining of remote picks is allowable, even in flight. So if you have a flight that's leaving the visual line of sight of one remote pilot in command, that position, that role can be handed off to another remote pilot in command in a sort of a daisy chaining way. I thought that was pretty interesting. They also mentioned flights over people. Okay, if the person is in a covered structure, and a non-moving vehicle qualifies for that, but that is also a waivable requirement. This term directly participating comes up in terms of who can be there and who the drone can fly over. And the remote pick deems who's involved, which people are necessary for safe flight. So it looks like the pilot in command defines who's directly participating. But that does exclude others. So people like property owners are not deemed necessary for the safe flight, so you can't fly over them. Actors on a closed site, that's another example of a group of people you can't fly over. Construction site people, another example.
Well, it's interesting that those scenarios we've had 333 waivers for.
Yes, exactly, Dave. We've had 333 exemptions for that sort of thing. And as I understand it, under Part 107, you will still be able to get waivers for flights over others, depending on the circumstances. A couple of interesting things. There's no requirement to obtain prior approval from property owners for operations over someone else's property. Also, autonomous operations are okay if the remote pilot in command has the opportunity to take over.
Pretty neat. You recommend everybody go on and look at the presentation?
Yes. Probably the fastest way to get through it would be to go through the presentation slides. Take a look at the links that we'll put in the show notes to the Hogan Lovells site. One other issue that they raised, David, or talked about that's not in Part 107 is they talked about the impact of 107 on the FAA reauthorization bills that are floating around in Congress. Hogan Lovells expects that there will be a new reauthorization extension enacted, probably a one-year extension, but this allows for some UAS policy reforms to be included in the extension. Things like a type certificate requirement, which is not in 107. In the Senate, they call for a micro UAS rule to be developed in 9 months. The House has its version of the reauthorization and immediately creates a micro UAS category. There's things floating around about package delivery, a new type of air carrier certificate, things about autonomous operations. And in at least one of the House bills, the rules for UAVs are suspended in disaster-impacted areas. The point being that as a result of the upcoming legislation to reauthorize the FAA, we could see some significant changes to what we see in Part 107 or some significant additions.
Well, that's what we said earlier, that this is just the beginning.
Right.
It's going to change, morph, grow, and we're going to have plenty to talk about over time. And the FAA reauthorization bill is probably going to be the next major topic that we are constantly harping on. Though I will say that I have to be nice to the FAA. When I took my picture in front of their office on Monday when I was down in D.C., believe it or not, the FAA retweeted it. So I hit it out of the park. At least the FAA knows who I am.
David, we also have an effective date for the UAS rule, Part 107.
And that date is?
August 29th, 2016.
So the next thing we're going to talk about is IACRA, which is the Integrated Airman Certification and Rating Application. You can find this at iacra.faa.gov and, or more to the point, you can go to the uavdigest.com and see the hyperlink.
It's a web-based application that takes you through the FAA's airman application process. Remote pilot certificates for small unmanned aircraft systems will be coming to IACRA in late August of this year, 2016. So I think to coincide with the effective date of the Part 107 rule.
We know quite a few people who've already completed their rules and just waiting for the paperwork.
Okay, that's about it for this episode of the UAV Digest. Want to thank you all for listening. It's been episode 152, so As always, you can find show notes for this with links to all the resources we mentioned at theuavdigest.com/152.
You can find us on Twitter at UAV Digest. You can find us on Facebook, which is Facebook/theUAVDigest. And we really would love for you to join our listener team. So send us an email at theuavdigest.com and we'll send you a link. And if you want to learn more, you can go to theuavdigest.com/team. And if you want to reach us, because we've screwed up again this week, you can reach me at david@theuavdigest.com, or you can forward your emails to Max at max@theuavdigest.com. But most of all, send us your links or news items. Or we didn't have a video of the week this week, folks, so we're always looking for someone to send us, even if it's just you flying your quadcopter around the backyard. If you want to be a little famous, send us your video. And how else can you help us? Well, you can leave a review on iTunes so other people can find us, or Stitcher.com if you stream it to your phone. And last but not least, if you want some swag, you can get it at our Cafe Press store, or you can become a patron of the show at patreon.com. And of course, all of those links are prepared weekly by Drone Mama, which we thank and appreciate and can be found on our webpage at theuavdigest.com. So with that, I'm going to say mea culpa. This is David in Philly.
And Max in Hartford.
Thanks for listening.